Mic check. Mic check.
Thanks for joining us, Titans fans, for another edition of MCM Radio. This is a Chiefs preview edition. And we got a lot of good topics to go in, injury report, the Know Your Enemy segment, and any roster addition or news. So without further ado, let me bring up the co-hosts. We are joined with Dan. Dan, it's really great to have you on. How are you today, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Good. Just other than dealing with the usual holiday, you know, BS with presents and obligations and crazy schedule, but I'm still on cloud nine with us beating the Denver Broncos. So all in all, things are good. I got nothing to complain about. And well, we also got August on. Let me bring up the other coho. August, how are you, brother?
Man, I'm doing all right, other than I'm freezing my testiculars off. Right now, I'm doing this podcast in the outside in the garage, and I have a long sleeve T-shirt, two hoodies, and a coat on to go with the toboggan, and just a nip of whiskey to help warm me up as well. But outside of that, doing really, really well. Took the little boy to go see Santa at the mall for the first time today, so he did a little bit of crying, but we got a good picture. All kind of good stuff.
Nice.
I'm in the garage as well.
Yeah, you got to do that. I'm in the basement, but I'm used to it now with the cold. So I got a little heater, got me electric blanket. So I'm good, guys. I'm toasty here. So that's the tip, August. Get you a little electric blanket and find you an outlet, and you'll be good.
Oh yeah. I used to have a little space heater out here, but I'm not sure what happened to it. But it's fitting considering how cold it's going to be here in Kansas City that we'll talk about here in a minute. But Dano,
yeah,
man,
sure.
It's awesome to have you back on the show. Awesome to have you back on the show. I know life's kept you out of the past couple episodes. Brandon and I were talking about it beforehand. I got to know what you thought about that win over the Broncos.
Well, I'm extraordinarily happy with it. Considering the last time I was on, we talked about I felt like we had to win that game in order to make any kind of playoff push. And as it turns out, it kind of feels like that's what had to happen. I think I'm with everybody in saying that the first half, I was kind of blown away with how we were able to keep them on their heels the entire time, the run game doing well, and Mariota looked polished, and then it all just kind of fell apart in the second half, but offensively that is, but defense kept us in it. And, you know, you watch some of the videos afterward and Mike Mularkey making comments like, I'd rather have this defense over any other defense in the league. And really and truly, for the first time, I feel like the defense has won the game for us this year. And it's coming at the right time. We need to keep on winning. But overall, I was very, very happy. Despite the second half meltdown offensively, they got it done. And it's just like a few other games this year. If this were last year, we wouldn't have won. So this team's definitely taking steps forward. And the playoff dream lives again for another week at least.
Oh, yeah,
heck yeah.
At least
and,
another
and like
couple weeks.
Said, yeah, and I mean, like you said, last year we don't win this game. I'd venture to say earlier this season we don't win this game. Because, I mean, you know,
I've
been talking about it over two episodes now and haven't gotten a little more time away from it. I mean, it really all came down to we didn't turn the ball over, and we recovered two turnovers, and that's what sealed the deal.
And touching on that with the turnovers, just to kind of hammer home how important it is to protect the football and win that battle, we had a total of 250 yards of total offense. They had almost 400, two 100-yard receivers. You know, if you would look at the statistics, you would think that we got blown out, but we had zero turnovers and they had two. You know, we started their opening drive. We started the game with a turnover and ended the game with the turnover. But a lot of was made about, like, Marcus's stat line. And I got a tweet that maybe I was a little too rough on him in the recap episode. But I wanted to heap some praise on how smart he played, regardless of the stat line, and just really illustrate, like, if we turn the ball over, I really believe one time that game we don't win. You know, it was he played so well.
Also, you know, outside of those two turnovers, the other biggest play in the game really was on special teams and went in our favor when Trey McBride downs that ball, you know, deep in their own territory to make that a tough drive for him late in the game. I mean, the three biggest plays really came in. Units that have been our Achilles heel, that being out of the secondary and special teams coverage.
And we'll have a heavy order with that against the Chiefs, but we'll touch on that going forward. I wanted to update the listeners with the injury report that was listed today and kind of see if Dan, if you had any idea on whether Casey's going to play. He's been limited and practiced today and yesterday, and he's really the name that sticks out the most on our injury report. So you think Casey's going to play?
You know, last week everybody was saying this is the biggest game for the Tennessee Titans in a long time, and I feel like it's going to be that way again this week. We're going to have to really try to win in order to get this playoff game that we want. Casey's a leader on this team. He's well-respected by everyone in the coaching staff, everyone associated with the organization. I feel like he's probably going to try to give it a go on Sunday.
I'm in agreement there. I got the impression from listening to, you know, local Nashville radio and some of the interviews with, you know, different players and Coach Malarkey's show, it sounded like he was pretty close to playing against Denver. So kind of projecting out if he was close, but just not quite there Sunday for Denver, I think I'm expecting them to play. I know they're not coming out with it, and I think they do the they'll do at least one more injury report, but most likely they'll probably list them as a game time decision. But for all intents and purposes, it's a playoff game, right, August?
And I mean, he was a true game time decision last week. He actually went out and warmed up with the team, and it was, you know, the pain level that he had and the lack of explosiveness that he had is what got the coaching staff and the training staff to say, no, we're going to go ahead and sit you one more week. And, I mean, you know, the fact that he's on the injury report this week, he's one of those, you know, kind of one of the few veterans on this team that could get away with not practicing for a week or for, you know, a week and a half. And if he's able to on game day, get out there and not miss a beat. So, I mean, my thing is, if he plays, I still don't think he's going to be 100%. I think that's kind of reflected by the roster move that they made. But, I mean, everything is on the line with these next three games, and especially when you look at this game and the Houston game. You know, anybody that's able to get up and put on a pair of pads, I expect is going to do everything they can to try and get out there and play a part in helping them, you know, get a huge win against a team that has been ridiculously good over the past year and a half.
Oh, yeah. Well, now touch on the roster movement that we had. If our listeners remember back to preseason when we were going, it was a guy you'd pegged. He had made the final roster, and I know it was somebody that you'd kept your eye on, Mehdi Abdismad. So was that a guy that you had followed? Did we talk about him during the draft at all, or was it somebody that kind of caught your eye during the preseason? Because I distinctly remember us having a conversation about him and you kind of making it a point for our listeners to be on the lookout for him.
Yeah, I wasn't really aware of him that much through the draft process because, I mean, you know, we had so much focus on those first two or three rounds. That, I mean, this past year I didn't really dive into those late-round kind of fringe guys. But once the list of undrafted free agents came out and you started reading up on some of them, he was one that really piqued my interest because, you know, at Boston College, he had some really good production. And, I mean, you know, he's a big body, physical dude. It was just injuries that really hampered his career. I don't think he put in an entire full season, maybe only had like a season and a half, maybe two seasons as a starter. But when he was out there, he was really productive. And that's one of the things you look at with undrafted free agents. Guys who basically the reason they didn't get drafted is because of health issues. And sometimes, I mean, I'm hoping this is the case for Abizmad. You know, they get on the practice squad and they have, you know, basically all this time to sort of rehab and get used to the NFL game instead of jumping right out there into the grind. Now, he actually made, I think we were talking about this before the show. I didn't get a chance to look it back up, but if I remember correctly, I think he made the final 53 coming out of camp. And then when we claimed Jason Morrow from the Jets, he was the guy who got bumped down and ended up on the practice squad because of that. My hope is that he can come in and actually be, you know, somebody at the back end of the rotation for this game now that he's had the time to heal up from his injuries and maybe get a little bit of a fresh start. I mean, you look at basically what happened with Antonio Andrews. I mean, that's how he ended up with us. Was we got him as an undrafted free agent when he had an injury, and he basically got an entire year off and then played like a guy who was worthy of a draft pick when he got his shot. So now I'm excited to see him get a shot, really. And I think the fact that they cut David Flewellen, the running back and special teams guy, to make room for him, you know, sort of indicates that it's a little bit of insurance in case Casey's not quite ready to go, because they both play that end position. And one of the reasons he jumped out at me was I remember specifically on the NFL.com scouting report, his NFL comp was former Titan Ropati Fatuatua. And as Dan pointed out before the show, he's wearing Ropati's number this year. So, you know, expected to be a guy who can stand up strong against the run, be a little bit raw as a pass rusher, but, you know, just a lot of physical ability. And a guy that I think Dick LeBeau, for the rest of the season, and maybe, you know, he plays himself into a spot next year where they can take advantage of that versatility, the same way they did with Ropati for the 2 or 3 years he was good for us.
Well, that works out well, and Flewellen made it to the practice squad. And honestly, I think Antonio Andrews only has one carry on the year. So there's not much, there's just nothing past, you know, Antonio Andrews to get a carry, unless hopefully we all the running backs ahead of him stay healthy. But it seems like that's probably the smartest move, is drop that fourth running back down. I know we're giving up a little bit on the practice squad, but another point with Abizmad is Klug is on the injury report. And I thought he played really well, especially against Denver. Dan, did you pick up on Klug at all? Because he really showed up on my screen a few times during that game.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I would think that most Titans would see, okay, Casey's out, but we're putting in Klug. Klug's not a guy that starts every single game, so he may have been a little fresh. He also may have burned himself out a little bit now that he's on the injury report. But I wasn't worried about him at all. I was expecting at some point someone to maybe say, well, you know, Klug missed a tackle here, and that's what set up. But that didn't happen. He played amazingly well. The guy's been so loyal to this franchise, it's not even funny. I think everybody loves Klug. I love Klug. And, yeah, I thought he played well against Denver. I was really proud of him.
Yeah, I love Klug, too. So his injury was listed as Achilles, but that was all I could really find on it, Dan. But he hasn't practiced the past couple days. I'd say, yeah, but it didn't say tear or anything, just listed as Achilles, where Jarrell's a foot. So I'd be really surprised if Klug plays.
Yeah, and that probably leans more towards, again, Casey getting in there at least part of the time. I mean, there's no way we can be down Klug and Casey, I wouldn't think. But kind of sounds like Klug may have been stomped on or rolled up on. Definitely haven't heard anything in the realms of any kind of tear or anything like that. So he should be fine in the long run, especially if we keep, you know, trucking along if the season extends. That's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. I think I know the answer, but we'd like to see them offer Klug another contract, wouldn't we?
Yes. And I feel like this organization and this coaching staff are going to learn from some of the mistakes that maybe happened in the past. And even if it's minimal, they'll probably try to be a little bit more loyal to some of the veterans, I think, that have been here and been attached to this franchise. Look, he proved it on Sunday. He can come in and fill in for a guy like Casey if he's going to be down and miss a game or two. The guy at least deserves like a one-year extension at the very least.
Yeah, he's coming off, I think, a two-year where it might have been $3 million.
It was a two.
Total, you know.
Yeah, actually, I just looked it up right now. He's due to be an unrestricted free agent. It was a $3.7 million two-year contract that he's had. I mean, you know, he's been with the team for 6 years now. And, you know, just his versatility and his ability in spot duty, if he's willing to come back for a contract number around there, I don't see any way that they would let him go. I certainly don't think they're dissatisfied with him. He's a really good rotational player, a guy who, you know, could be a little bit of a pass rush specialist, but also isn't just garbage against the run or anything. He's just better when he's a little fresher. He's not like Darrell Casey. He can get out there and play with that motor for, you know, 60, 70 stats a game. That's just not the kind of guy that he is. But I swear to God, if the NFL kept track of, like, assisted sacks, you know, like when a guy gets close and pushes the quarterback off his spot and then somebody else comes in, like Morgan or Ratko, and finishes him off, I mean, Carl Klug might be a Hall of Famer if that was the stat. Because he gets to the pressure. He wreaks havoc on such a regular basis. He's just never had that knack for finishing play.
I look at it like he plays like a $10 million a year guy for 20 snaps a game or 15 or whatever his average is. He really plays well, and I'm sure they have him on a pitch count because maybe that's the top of his limitation, so he doesn't get much recognition outside of our fan base, and you really got to be a fan paying pretty close attention to him. But I'd love for us to offer him, especially something, a two-year, and maybe even give him a little bit of a raise, like Dan was alluding to take care of some of these guys that really do make up a core part of the team. You know, so much of the back end of the roster is really important, especially when we're on a playoff push. And we got our defensive star, Darrell Casey, banged up. Unfortunately, Klug is too, but I've just loved having him on the team. And when he gets out there, he just plays his ass off, guys. So I know that's probably enough on Carl Klug, but
we need more Carl Klugs on this team. Let's say that.
Yeah.
You don't need to look that hard to find Carl Klug. He's the white guy that's pardon my French, fucking people up in the backfield just about every time he's in there.
he's got those stubby short arms. That's why he fell in the draft. He's like a little T-Rex out there just clawing at people. So
he was a more successful version of Mike Martin, and that's all I'll say.
Yeah,
yep.
Martin didn't do
now,
anything.
Now, there's a pull.
Take
the incredible
pull. Yeah.
Hey, he was a beast
in
the workout room.
Oh, I know. He played at University of Michigan, so I was pulling for him, but I wasn't real impressed with him in college, to be honest with you. But no point in crapping on him. Here's something I want to crap on. Dan, you wrote the schedule up for the NFL, right? And you keep screwing us because the Chiefs were on Thursday Night Football last week playing the Raiders, but they're coming off 10 days rest. That is, I haven't tallied it up, but I know we've had six games where we've played somebody either coming off their bye or Thursday Night Football, and there's probably a time where it was both, and they just went ahead and gave them like 20 days to prepare for us. So what's up with that?
I don't know. There's that stigma out there of the scorned Titans fan that looks at it and is just like, well, there it is. There's the league screwing us yet again. But if you really sit down and analyze it, it kind of feels that way sometimes. I mean, it feels like they made the schedule. They're like, the Titans, they were terrible last year. So, you know, it's no big deal. They'll probably be, 2-12 anyway. So just go ahead and screw them over with all these guys coming off the bye week. What does it matter? I don't think anybody really expected us to be as good as we are. I don't know how much credence there is to that, but, man, and I know there's a lot of complaining to go around in the NFL, but this team, as far as scheduling goes, gets romped on every single year. Hopefully, now that we're a little bit better, that'll change in the future, now that there's more awareness being brought to Tennessee, but it really feels like, hey, no one gives a crap about them, so whatever.
Well, and if I can bring you guys back to the preseason, we played three preseason games versus in-season opponents, too. Go ahead, Art.
Yeah.
Yep, and two or three of those teams had extra prep time, which means that that difference actually mattered. As opposed to, because, I mean, look, you know, as much as we were complaining in the preseason, like, oh, we got to play. I mean, they had to play us, too. You know, we got to look at their stuff just as much as they got to look at our stuff. But it's the fact that they had the extra prep time. That I think sort of played into it. I was going to bring up something that Matt brought up earlier in the week. We were talking, and it escaped my mind. What's that part? The other scheduling thing that, look, it ended up kind of breaking well for us because we got to get a little momentum. But there can't be that big of a coincidence that it was us and the Browns that got the very last bye weeks.
And no, they tried trapping us out of the cleats, you know.
Yeah.
Oh. One side topic with that, I will actually give the NFL credit. And Brandon, you remember you and I, and I think it was Gunnell, gave all kind of hell to the NFL over that cleat thing. And, you know, you and I, and Dan, I think we've brought it up over the years too. It's always infuriated me that the NFL does the pink – breast cancer awareness stuff. Breast cancer is a huge issue, but I'm sorry, this is not the platform for it. You have the largest cats of male audience in the free world. Why would you not promote a health concern that has to do with them, like, say, I don't know, prostate cancer, colon cancer, those sorts of things? The NFL actually decided that they're not going to do the breast cancer awareness thing next month, and they're going to let each team pick their, I don't remember if it's a cancer-related charity or, you know, just their own charity effort for that month, which I think is really, really cool.
I know it's near and dear to your heart right now, August, because you said you're freezing your balls off.
No doubt, awareness. I mean, we all got to take care of what we got to take care of. But, I mean, it always just felt like such a disingenuous, publicity stunt to try and bring in female viewers. You know, I don't think it really – look, there are enough issues with the Susan G. Coleman Foundation in the background and how that money gets spent.
Right.
But just on principle, it was such a crass publicity stunt. Instead of trying to do something that actually affects change and brings awareness to something that, you know, is significant to the audience that's watching your product.
Well, even when the NFL as a league does something right, they do it wrong. You know, they're just in the habit of it.
They've been hustling backwards since 1976, man.
Yeah, I can't remember what year they started it, but whenever they started that, please sign up for $100 and join the Female Titans Club. You'll be able to come together once a month with other Female Titans fans and do this, that, and the other. I'm like, what's going on here? I mean, why are we having to separate this? Because it just feels like a stunt. I mean, it's the same thing with the breast cancer awareness. It just felt forced and, you know,
yeah,
a ploy after a while. So
I felt like if you want to do something to bring in and they have been a little better, but if you want to get the women who just really don't care about football that maybe you can get interested in, because I think there's just going to be a segment of the population, regardless of race, creed, color, anything, that just don't give a crap about football, you know? And
well,
no amount of
pink.
Who's going
to watch football just because it – who's going to just watch football because they're wearing pink cleats and supporting breast cancer research?
No one.
Nobody.
Yeah. So, but what I have liked them doing, because, you know, I'm a feminist at heart, is crack down on the domestic violence guys, you know? Instead of just kind of sweeping so much of that stuff under the rug, doing something about it. And I think those are the type of things obviously I want him donating to good causes and charities.
Unless you're a punter for the Giants.
No, that was awful. Yeah, they did. Yeah, I know. Like I said, even when they do something right, they do it wrong. You know, you got a guy, that Josh Brown guy, who had over 20 instances of police being called to his house. Because I know we're way off topic now, but it's just going to piss me off. But yeah, they could do a whole lot of other stuff right. But anyway, if they just get our schedule right next year, that would go a long way into pleasing me. You know what I'm saying? And
way to get
I think
track,
some of it.
Buddy. That was good.
Yeah, and I think some of it is kind of self-fulfilled. When you suck, you always have to play your division. And we've had a division that's, you know, not won a lot of games collectively other than, you know, a 9-win Texans team or something like that. And that's kind of been the cream of the crop. But where we're the fourth-place team or the third-place team, depending on, well, we've been the fourth the past couple of years. You know, when you have that off division that you play, that you don't play the whole division, you play the team that finishes in the same respective place that you do, and I think that ties into like our primetime game. You know, we finished first this year, and I don't think we have the AFC. The AFC North was, well, we played the whole division this year. You know how this year the AFC North we played like the Browns. If we were a first place team, that would have been a Steelers game or something. You know, mm-hmm. and I feel like they just kind of keep lumping the crappy teams together, like us with the Browns, and you don't get the primetime game. You get crapped on with the bye week. They don't let you wear your pretty shoes, you know, that you got a cause for. But it's just been so frustrating that we haven't been a good team, and we've been getting it together. And I think we're more together today than we were game one. And we're kind of playing this season on hard mode because we keep having opponents that have extra time to prepare for us. And that is an advantage we never get because we only get our one Thursday night a year when they lump us in with Jacksonville and the bye week. So it's not like it balances out in our instance. You know, we've had extra time to prepare for two opponents, and we've faced six opponents that have had extra time to prepare for us, you know. So, August, what you were touching on with, you know, like the difference that it does make, especially with the preseason teams, the Chargers and Raiders we played in the preseason, and we lost by one score. You know, they do add up. You know, it's just a razor-thin margin, but I feel like I feel like we're a better team today now, especially defensively.
You sound like a guy who's got the schedule up in front of you. What's our record on those teams that we had the extra prep time for us? Can you tell?
Oh, let's see here. I don't have it all in. I don't have the ones that have the prep time in front of me. That was just kind of me going by feel. If I was worth a damn, I would have done the research and had that. But I decided to just complain, you know. I'm going to put the Christ back in Christmas kind of guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to start railing. The hell weather. I'm just teasing that. So, beyond that, you guys want to get into the Know Your Enemy segment and talk some Chiefs?
Oh, hang on. I wanted to mention one thing that I texted you guys about a couple days ago. And whoever I'm talking about on this, I know you listen to this show, so I want you to tweet me at AugustWest_MCM and let me know who you are. But I'm a big-time fan of The Right Time with Bomani Jones, the ESPN radio show, nationally syndicated show. And there was a dude from Tennessee who called in talking about the Tennessee Titans and referenced, when Derrick Henry comes through that hole, defenders have to make business decisions. And I wanted to give credit to our boy Brandon, who was the one who came up with that back in the preseason. I've never heard anybody else say it. Maybe I'm incorrect. It's definitely one of the catchphrases from this show. So whoever tried to bring that to light to a national audience, good on you, dude, and tweet at me so I can give you proper credit, because that did not go unnoticed.
Yeah, we need a hashtag. One day we'll start trending on Twitter, guys. I firmly believe that. And we're going to get Dan a check mark.
I'm surprised I haven't been offered the check mark, to be honest with you. That thing's been open for a long time.
You got to apply for it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to go and apply for it. They just need to give it to me. Just give me the check mark.
That should be our next Twitter hashtag movement.
Spoken like a true champion.
Give me the check mark. Hail to the king, baby. This week's enemy is Kansas City Chiefs, as if you didn't already know. We are going to Arrowhead to play. So, Dan, overall, what's your first impressions with this team, this matchup, anything, you know, that kind of paint with a broad brush, and we'll drill down into some of the more specifics here.
I think it's going to be rough. I mean, it's going to be a rough game on both sides of the ball. Kansas City's one of those teams that's had our number the last few times we played them. The last time I truly remember us ever stomping the Chiefs out was the game that Lindale White ran for like an 80-yard touchdown and about collapsed from lack of oxygen.
No,
but
we throttled
Bongos.
Lindenhunt the first year of his second year.
Okay. All right.
Malarkey
but,
was on staff
that was
for that.
I mean,
that was opening day.
Yeah, but that, I mean, that was, you know, when you give Ken Whisenhunt 6 months to game prep, he's pretty damn good as a head coach.
Yeah, the infamous opening game of the season. But, look, they're good on defense. They're good on offense. They don't turn the ball over a whole lot. Andy Reid's a great coach. Everybody knows that. And, I mean, they're looking to try to lock up a very difficult division right now. The Raiders and Chiefs and Broncos are all technically still in it. So, playing at Arrowhead's never easy, ever. It's one of the highest capacity stadiums, if not the highest capacity stadium in the NFL. And the games with them, it's almost like playing the Steelers, because when we play the Steelers, it seems like we revert back to old days when you're just going to try to beat each other up front and run the ball and see who comes out on top. And we play the Chiefs the exact same way, and it's never, ever, ever easy. But the Titans, they're on a roll right now. They should have the utmost confidence because they just took care of a very good Denver team. And they've got a chance that because they believe, and for the first time in a long time, they believe they can do it.
August, same question. First impressions.
So the Kansas City Chiefs are a team that has won a crap load of games over the two seasons. They've already won 10 games this year. They have a ton of talent on the defensive side. They've got a very good coaching staff on the defensive side. And kind of like Andy Reid's teams in Philadelphia, it's an offense that's based around efficiency and not turning the ball over. So the formula for hanging with the Chiefs is, look, if you look back over the course of their schedule, you don't have to score 30 points to beat Kansas City. They are kind of like us outside of that three-game stretch we had where, you know, Mariota was just going nuts. You know, they're going to get about 21, 24 points pretty much out of each game. And what it's come down to is their completely absurd positive turnover differential. They take the ball away, and they don't turn the ball over, and they play good field position game on special teams, and that's been their formula. So, you know, it looks like on paper that it would be a team that maybe we match up pretty well with now that we've really cut down on the turnovers. We can stay balanced. You know, a defense that really its biggest struggle has been giving up the big plays, and Kansas City doesn't generally make big plays. Alex Smith is the most conservative quarterback in the NFL. Here's what worries me. If you look at their last three games, nobody else has really noticed it, but Alex Smith has started throwing the ball downfield. I think he had two completions over 30 yards the entire first, like, 10 weeks of the season. And in his last three games, he's got, like, six, you know, on their own. And with how good he is throwing it underneath and with his timing and precision routes, and that's really been his game his entire time in the NFL, it's just going to take one or two deep balls to, you know, like a Jeremy Maclin or a Tyreek Hill or, you know, one of their speedy playmakers to really throw this defense off kilter. And that's probably the thing that worries me the most. If they were playing the way they were playing earlier in the season and it was all just real conservative, I would feel pretty good about our front seven's ability to match up and the quarterback's ability to match up, knowing that they don't really have to cover the deep ball. They can sort of sit on things that are underneath. But if they're going to pop a couple of big plays on us, that's a little more worrisome in my book. And then like we all saw in that Thursday night game, now that Tariq Hill has kind of gotten in full NFL speed, he could be a terror on special teams.
And that's really what I think is going to be the X factor, because I think if our offense plays up to its ability, we have a better offense. We are efficient, maybe not as efficient, but we're close in efficiency. Now I'm talking about when things are going right. Okay. But our passing game's been better. Our running game's been better. And I feel like our big plays have been better. Defense is where, when our defense plays the best, I don't think it's going to, it might be 70-80% as good as if Kansas City's defense plays the best. They got some really good guys at all three levels. We're getting them at a time where Derek Johnson just got injured. So I feel like the game plan is going to be similar to how we beat Denver. And it's one of those where this is the game plan that will keep us in the game. And if we can just make enough plays like we did Sunday against Denver, then maybe we can pull out a win. Now, they had us nervous against the Broncos because it definitely was a tale of two halves. But I was digging through while I was doing a little research for this game and kind of looking at common opponents, since we've played Broncos, Raiders, and they've played some of our and they've had to play the AFC South. So virtually we got several common opponents to go by. And by the numbers, and I haven't seen many Chiefs games other than I think the Thursday night game and maybe when they played Indy, I think that was on here. So I hadn't seen a lot, but I get the impression that similar to us, they're a better team today than they were at week one. But I feel like, and maybe you kind of feel the same way too, Dan, is they've made being a better, more veteran team and their roster being a little bit further in the process than we are, because they've been a consistent playoff team for a handful of years. They're a deep roster, but they've had games where they made a couple plays and got lucky. Otherwise, we would have they'd be more like 8-5 instead of 10-3. They beat the Broncos in overtime, barely. You know, they were rattling the uprights and squeaked a field goal in overtime at the very end of overtime. And we just beat the Broncos, but that's a game that could have went either way. And the Falcons had them beat, and our boy Eric Berry came up big in a crazy play and scored on the two-point conversion.
That was bananas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they scored, yeah. For anybody that missed that one, they go ahead. The Falcons go ahead on the Chiefs. They're up by one. Doesn't do you any good to kick the extra point. So they go for the two-point conversion, and Eric Berry picks it off, runs the other way. All of a sudden, they get the ball back with the lead. And, you know, that's a new rule for this year. So it's the first time in NFL history, basically, that something like that has happened.
Oh, it was crazy. So the Falcons ended up losing by one because of that play. But
wow.
We have had, in a lot of these common opponents, not only have we had better offensive output, but better defensive numbers as well. It's really just been the games that they got that are games that we didn't are just because we ended up turning the ball over, and that's not something they have done much at all.
No.
They've been really clean with it. You know, it's
Alex. Alex Smith would be starting quarterback in this league if he wasn't extraordinarily careful with that football. I mean, he he's pinpoint. He does what he does, but the number one thing he does better than anything is not turn the ball over. It's been very hard, not just this season, but his entire career, to get him to throw an errant pass or do something to cause a turnover.
Yeah, yeah. To kind of compare, he's at a 67.3% completion percentage with yards per attempt of 7.1. He's got 2,800 yards, 12 touchdowns, and 5 picks. So when you contrast that to Marcus, who has 62.6 completion percentage, over 3,000 yards, 25 touchdowns. Marcus has thrown more than twice the number of touchdowns, 8 picks, so a little less than half, and he's almost a full yard better at yard per attempt, and that's coming off that Denver game, which I'm sure skewed some of these numbers. So I think if we get Marcus at what he's played the best this year, then we actually have an advantage at the quarterback position. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. I will tell you the biggest thing that scares me is the matchup against the Titans we got to talk about every single week. And this is an especially bad one. Travis Kelce is one hell of a tight end. Now, he doesn't have huge touchdown numbers. He hasn't been quite the red zone threat that he really should be. But if the Titans don't do a really good job of hitting the hell out of him before he gets into routes, forcing him to stay in as a blocker a little more and really pay attention to him, he might shred this defense up the middle worse than any tight end that we've seen so far this year. And that is just going to kind of throw all kind of wrinkles into this game plan.
Yeah, yeah, they've got to be able to stop him. That the old adage goes that we can't stop the tight end, but I feel like they've done a pretty decent job this year of kind of beating that one away. But this is a game where he can win it for Kansas City.
Anytime I feel like anybody says we got slightly better about covering tight ends this year, I just have to remind everyone of CJ Fedorowicz. It is a rusty wheel, even if the wheel is back on the axle. For us. And in all honesty, we haven't faced a lot of really great tight ends. Eric Ebron was, still pretty banged up and is still an inconsistent guy in Detroit. Dwayne Allen was out.
And he still got wide open about 4 times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he was just dropping the ball. So Dwayne Allen was out the first time we played the Colts. The Raiders, some of these other teams don't have really prolific sort of tight ends. And, Travis Kelce is definitely one of the elite guys in the league right now. That's what I'm saying. They can't expect these linebackers to cover him if he's got a free release. We have to do what teams have been doing to Delanie Walker over the past couple of weeks, which is just absolutely mauling him in those first 2 or 3 yards off the snap and trying to throw the timing and the rhythm off, because Alex Smith is not going to hold the ball. He's going to check down as soon as Travis Kelce's out of sync.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way. Whose responsibility is it going to be to cover him? We're going to put Woodyard or Williamson on him to try to just chip him.
I think
every
it's going to be Byard. We've the past few weeks we've had Byard cover tight ends a little more and more. I've been, a fan of the, he's a fan favorite. We love the kid, so he's somebody that I've tried to follow a little bit. I'm not saying I'm expert,
but he's
film
such a
analysis or anything. Well, we don't.
Kelce's going to be able to body him out, I think, a whole lot. But, yeah, he's probably got the best chance of sticking with him.
I think he – when you take our safeties and linebackers and put and figure out, okay, who plays man the best, it's Byard. And we've just been playing so much man. They got Parrish Cox camp.
Yeah.
He's out of work. Now, I thought – Dan, how did you feel about the secondary against Denver? I thought even though the passing statistics against them looked bad, I thought they held up really well. Me and August kind of went back and forth on that a little bit in the last show. But what was your thoughts? Because that'll come into play against the Chiefs.
Well, they played good enough for us to win. So, you can't really gripe too much, in my opinion. But let's face the facts. This secondary is living on a prayer right now. I mean, it's a miracle that they haven't been roasted too bad this year. Hopefully it doesn't come before the end of the season. But like I said, they held up good enough to get us through that game. That's really all you can ask for, in my opinion.
And I know we're not huge believers in Pro Football Focus, but, yeah, we definitely live out of prayer. LeSean Sims, the rookie quarterback, actually graded out the best on the defense last week. I thought that was really cool to see and something that kind of gives me hopes, because all year we've talked, I think what we're hoping for or holding out hope for is a secondary rebuild in the offseason the way the offensive line got rebuilt. And to see a corner that we didn't expect really any production out of this year to go out there, play meaningful snaps in a game that we're pretty much playing playoff football for what were our intents and purposes. And he held up really well against a couple really good receivers. You know, McCourty looked like the weakest link at times against Denver, and that is such a turnaround from him being the only guy that looks like a serviceable corner out there.
Well, okay. I want to talk about this one, because I know you mentioned LeSean Sims, you know, quote-unquote grading out as the best. You're talking about Pro Football Focus and their breakdown of it. And this is one of the flaws in the way that they grade certain things. So they gave McCourty a poor grade, and they gave LeSean Sims and Bryce McCain two of the best grades on our defense. Okay, and when you look at even the breakdown that they wrote, I think LeSean Sims got thrown on 5 times and McCain got thrown on 3, maybe 4 times. And that's because they were rotating Emmanuel Sanders and Thomas into Jason McCourty's spot. Because the entire philosophy for that defensive setup we had going against them, it's kind of like what we said at the end of the game. Anytime you force 2 turnovers and you make Trevor Siemian throw the ball 50 times, you're doing something well. He threw the ball 50 times because we were playing off and keeping everything in front of us. You know, even though McCourty gave up all those yards, they were 5, 6, 7-yard catches, and he made the tackle every single time. For what the game plan called for, I will contend that McCourty did the best job out of all of the cornerbacks, because his job was to keep those guys in front of him and shut it down as soon as it happened. You didn't see him blow tackles. You didn't see those turn into big plays. I think he got beat deep once. Kind of early on, if I'm remembering correctly, by Emmanuel Sanders. Outside of that, he did exactly what his job is. And that's kind of what drives me crazy about Pro Football Focus and the fact that, like, their grading scale doesn't take into account intent or game plan or anything like that. So they just read it as, oh, he gave up all these yards and receptions. Yes, but he didn't give up any effective yards or anything. You know, he didn't get beat for touchdowns. He didn't give up big plays. And it's not his fault that he was targeted more often. It just happened to be that they were putting the only wide receivers they have worth a damn on Jason McCourty. So, of course, they're going to get the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, I see that.
LeSean Sims and Bryce McCain were not covering Emmanuel Sanders or Demaryius Thomas, I guess is what it comes down to me.
I'm sure they would have had to have covered him some, but I hear what you're saying, August. And this wasn't me, you know, trying to – take a shot at McCourty. You know what a big fan I am of him. It seems like, and kind of what you're saying, McCourty plays zone. If all we were playing is zone, McCourty would be hands down the best DB on the roster, because he is so good at keeping the guys in front of him and doing his best to make a play on the ball or tackling. But Sims, McCain got some pass breakups. They were in the hip pocket of whoever, even if it wasn't Sanders and maybe it was Demaryius Thomas. But those guys were – I felt like they held up really well. And even though I know I'm not a huge subscriber to what PFF does, it's nice to have something to kind of back up what I felt like I was seeing, because – I didn't have a chance to rewatch the game and look at every play and rewind and watch one DB and see how he did on a play and rewind and then watch the same play for every other
player like they do, but you kind of take these glimpses of things that stuck out. Kind of like when we were talking about Klug earlier. It's like, okay, you're just trying to watch, get, you know, the entire screen and get as much information as you can while the game's going on, and things stand out. And then you kind of zone in on it. You know, that's how I always feel about Klug. And to me, Sims was showing up, you know. And I just really like seeing our younger corners that got put in a position that we really didn't expect them to hold up to actually find the ball in the air and keep the guy from catching it, as opposed to letting them catch it and then just tackling him immediately, which you need that. And that's what McCourty is. Go ahead.
But it, I guess, you know, it gets back to my point. I'm going to give more praise to the guy who kept Emmanuel Sanders in front of him and didn't let him make big plays, didn't let him convert a lot of third downs. They didn't convert a third down until the fourth quarter of that game, even though Emmanuel Sanders already had almost 100 yards receiving. I give more praise to the guy who does that than the dude who breaks up two passes while covering A.J. Derby. Is my point. And that's just what bugs me about some of their grading.
Yeah.
And that's not coming down on you. That's just what I'm saying. You have to put with the flaws in their grading on sometimes in context, because they're not judging the intent or what the guy's responsibility was. They just look at it as, did he break it up? Was it a catch? Did he make the tackle? Here's our grade. No.
Okay. Well, to kind of bring it back to the Chiefs, we know we have to cover Kelce, but we're pretty certain we don't have a person on the roster that can do that. We have to stop the run, which I think we can. You know, Dan and you were talking about, you know, the defense coming on earlier. It feels like they're getting better each week at making the other team one-dimensional. So if we can stop the run, then the other thing that I'm worried about is not to let Tyreek Hill get behind the defense. And maybe that's what August is talking about with McCourty and why he would be so important, because that's a guy that we need the defense to keep in front of him. So
absolutely. You know, they have been doing a good job of making people one-dimensional, even if it's just for a half. That half where they, you know, kind of stood on their heads and just completely devoured Denver allowed us the time to run
that won the game.
Off the clock. Yeah, it won the game for us. It really did. So, I mean, look, everybody that's listening to this podcast knows that we're not going to be able to let any receivers run free whatsoever. They're going to pick us apart. I mean, the pressure was there last week in Denver for the first half, but it's just not been consistent enough to shut a team down all four quarters. So, and a lot of that's due to the secondary play, but you know, if we can stop the run, then we can rely a little bit more on dime packages and all those kind of things to help get us through. And that's what we've done the last few weeks. It's what we're going to have to continue to do, is just play well enough to get us through this thing and then move on to the next one. We're not going to shut anybody completely down.
No, we're not.
Dan, I know you got to hop. I know you got to hop off here in a second. We can't let you go without. And then, Brandon, you and I will talk about it. But, Dan, I got to get your input on what's been the big story kind of around the Titans over the course of this week, prepping for this game. Marcus Mariota, the Hawaiian kid, the great hope out of Oregon, never played in cold weather. It's expected to be single digits and windy in Kansas City. He said he tried to practice in the cold here in Tennessee with a glove on and didn't feel good about it. He's going to use hand warmers. Do you think that becomes a factor?
His first time in the elements, yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit of a factor. But Mariota has impressed me with his preparation and just getting by on sheer will. I think in the beginning it might take him back a little bit, but I don't think that he's going to have, like last week, his second half performance. I don't think that's going to be the case throughout. So, yeah, the weather's definitely going to play a factor, but they're also going to try to protect him with a run game. The Titans can establish that run game. It's not going to do anything but help Marcus Mariota out, and we won't have to throw as many passes. So I guess the answer to that question is yes, but he's going to work through it, I think.
I think we'll need him to.
Yeah, we're definitely going to need him to.
Yeah, to wish for injuries. I've thought Derek Johnson had, you know, been a fantastic player, but kind of mired by injuries. But if he's going to miss a game, I'm fine with him missing this one, because I think it'll be similar to Denver. You know, we just, you know, like what you're saying, Dan, if we can hold the ball for 20 minutes in the first half like we did against Denver, we're going to be in much better position to beat them. We'll just need to we're going to need a little more out of the passing game, I think. I think they're a more complete team, probably the most complete team we've faced and one of the most complete teams in the NFL. So we're going to know a lot about our team after this game.
Absolutely, I agree.
All right, Dan. Well, I know you got to sign off. So you got a prediction or a matchup or anything that you're looking forward to or going to make sure to take an eye on? Or how do you feel?
You know, had we lost to Denver, I think this would have been a foregone conclusion that we would have lost this one. But I have faith that, like I said, they've made believers out of me. They've won games that on paper they've had no business winning. And this team right now is unified. So I think we're going to win 28-27.
Ooh. Byard intercepting a two-point conversion and running it back.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be amazing.
I think
I got a lightning question for you, just a simple yes or no.
Okay.
As a diehard right. UT Vol, if Derrick Henry comes through that hole and Eric Berry's standing on the other side, who wins?
Derrick Henry. He's younger, he's bigger, and I love Eric Berry. If there's some way or another we could manage to get him on this team, I just hit the roof someday. But Derrick Henry wins that matchup today.
Right on, buddy. Thank you for joining. Sorry to cut you off there, but I had to get that question in there at the end.
No, man, it's good. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, bye.
All right, August. Man, I love an optimistic Dan, don't you?
Heck yeah, dude. It's fun. I mean, Dan is a – you know, usually I'm the super optimistic one. And so over the last 3 years, Dan has had to do a whole lot of trying to tether me to the ground. Unfortunately, he's been right more than he's been wrong. He had a hell of a preseason and offseason to being right on stuff. So I'm hoping that that good insight that he's had to the team is going to carry through, because it looks like he's got a decent amount of faith in this game. You know, talking about the game plan, I guess to wrap up the sort of preview of the Chiefs. You know, I said it last week, and we saw it a little bit early in the game. I think the weather is going to affect Marcus. Not saying that he's incapable of playing in cold weather, but given the makeup of these two teams and the fact that Kansas City defense is really good to get to the quarterback and really good at forcing turnovers, but is not just a physically punishing defense like, say, the Broncos are, or even the Ravens defense this year, which is, you know, quietly become really, really good over the past half of the season. I think they got to use Marcus running the ball. Use more of the read option stuff they've been setting up over the course of this entire season, and have him keep the ball a little bit more. On some of these third down plays, you know, instead of going, you know, run, and then have him try and convert a third and long, that sort of stuff, let him use his feet, because I think he's going to get us at least close to the first down marker, if not all the way there. And then you've got Henry and DeMarco Murray, to sort of maybe get us a fourth down or two over the course of the game. But I really think they need to early get him involved running and stick to it over the course of the game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Arrowhead's a home field advantage anyway. The weather, I think you're right. I think it's going to have some effect on Marcus. I don't know how big. I think it's going to be a lot like the Denver game plan, where as long as we're in the game, we're just going to run the ball. We're going to run the ball, play good defense. If we rush it 40 times again, and Marcus only throws it 21, 22 times, I think the caveat there, August, is we need to connect on more than five or six like we did. And the secondary, is good, but I don't think the corners play as well as Denver's. So, you know, realistically, the biggest stat line, I think, and I harped on it and I opened the show talking about it, is just with the turnovers. Do not turn the ball over. That's where the weather and Marcus scares me. He's done such a good job about playing smart. Like you said, when we've been running some of the zone read, he's not been taking a risk. He's not pitched a ball outside of the numbers, I don't think, since he lost it in San Diego. And he's not taking big hits. You know, he just takes what he can get and drops. And last week he threw balls away instead of, you know, there was one pass that it was a bad pass last week, and it didn't get intercepted. And I think that really kind of freaked him out, you know. Like, I can lose the game on an interception, but I'm probably not going to win it by a single pass. So just play smart. And I think he's going to have to again. And I think he's capable of it, though, you know. But it's going to be – honestly, if our defense holds up again, I think we win. I think the offense will do enough. And every now – honestly, August, the first quarter, first, you know, 20 minutes or so of the Denver game, I thought, it as unlikely as it was, I was really thinking this is going to be another Green Bay Packers game. We're going to end up just run, you know, we were just, everything was working. And credit to your guy, Wade Phillips, by making the adjustments and totally negating what we were doing. But, you know, I am hoping that we can come out of Kansas City with a win. And I think we're capable of it. I just don't know how likely it is, you know. And the special teams scares me. It scares me so much. Because we've done okay, just kind of mitigating the other guys. But it looks like they got the second coming of Dante Hall back there again. You know, that special teams coach they got in Kansas City's got to be the best in the league. They just find guys that are great at returning.
Well, also, I'll say, Tariq Hill, even though it seems like he's come out of nowhere, if you go back and read up on him, he really would have been a second, maybe third round pick. Just because of his physical abilities, his special teams abilities, and his potential as a wide receiver. But he has a very ugly domestic violence incident that happened mm-hmm. in college that I think got him benched for an entire year, to the point that when they took him in the fifth round, Andy Reid had to call the owner and get permission to draft him. That's how heavy sort of the off-the-field baggage was with this kid. So, you know, for a lot of NFL fans, he's sort of coming out of the middle of nowhere, and it's like, oh, they found a gem. No, there were a lot of teams that if he didn't have the baggage on him, would have taken him way, way early. So, you know, it's just a matter of if he can keep, you know, if he can keep his nose clean outside of the field. But on the field, yeah, he's a very dynamic player. I'll be really interested to see if, look, I mean, you saw how he's hurt teams the past couple of weeks. If he is another Dante Hall, if he is another you know, Devin Hester, why would you kick to him?
Right.
And Brett Kern is one of the better directional kickers, one of the better directional punters that we have in the league. So it would not surprise me at all to see him, you know, kick it high, try and get the coverage team down there, or try and pin it down in the corner and just not give him a chance to return the ball. Because if they score any points on special teams, we're toast.
This is going to be a razor-thin margin here. We'll have to play a perfect game plan, all three phases. So what is the matchup that is most important to you? And then give me a prediction, August.
Travis Kelce. I mean, they've got to find a way to handle him. Like I said, they've got to be physical with him. You saw Delanie Walker complain about how the Colts played him after that game. That's what we have to do to Travis Kelce. And it takes a lot of intelligent coordination on, you know, the guys on the outside of the line, whether you're talking about, you know, Jarrell Casey or Daquan Jones, or you're talking about Arakpo or Morgan, to get your hands off of him and knock him off rhythm, knock him off his spot, make sure that he doesn't get to where he's supposed to be until he's, you know, a couple of seconds late. If they can do that and he's got to rely more on his outside receivers, we could do a much better job of keeping everything in front of us and, you know, trying to take advantage of a mistake as it comes. So I think that matchup is really going to be crucial. Also, you know, I guess the second part of that is Delanie Walker. We need a big game out of Delanie Walker to free up, you know, Rishard Matthews on the outside. From everything I'm hearing, Kendall Wright hasn't missed any meetings this week. And, you know, all of that hubbub that came out, apparently when Mularkey sat down with Kendall, he did tell him immediately, you're going to be benched this game. But, hey, you know, we're going to need you if we're going to make these playoffs. We're not, you know, you're not going to be penalized games moving forward if you get your crap straight. So I expect a big game out of Kendall and a big game out of Delanie. I don't think we're going to win this game. I will be very surprised if we do. If we do, then we're absolutely in the driver's seat for the playoffs. And I think Jacksonville and Houston are going to be scribbling in their boots when they come to play us. But I'm not sure that we're going to win this game. They're such a good team. They're at home. They've had the extra prep time. The cold weather doesn't look good for our quarterback. So I think it probably comes down to like a 21-17.
I am going to say we win 20-17 on a last-second field goal. Revenge game for Ryan Stuckup. We put it through. And as far as the Texans, I know this is off topic, August, but I got this feeling that the Jags are going to get another win before the year's up. I feel like they're going to play spoiler and upset somebody. And I am hoping that it's the Texans this week. I mean, how great would that be? Because they play the Texans, us, and then the Colts. That's the Jags' end of the schedule. And there's just something that kind of makes me nervous about our game with them, which we'll go more into. But I'm hoping that with everything on the line, they really go out there and can help us and beat the Texans Sunday. So the last couple things I wanted to talk about before wrapping up, I know we've gotten a little long, is Dolly Parton. And we've sang her praises, haven't we, August, about how awesome she is a couple times on the show with the fires and destruction in Gatlinburg. She had a telethon on the 13th in Nashville. A lot of the Titans media, like Mike Key, players were there, a lot of local Nashville celebrities, country music singers. They raised, what I read is, the first thing I saw was it was somewhere between 3 and 4 million, but it was still going. And I read today, August, they raised $9 million. So I hope that number's accurate, but I know it was a big number. And Amy Adams Strunk had the Titans organization donate $144,000 to them directly, and it's designed for any family affected by that are going to get $1,000 a month from this fund for 6 months to help them kind of get on their feet and get everything back in order. So I wanted to give a shout-out to the Titans for being part of it, and then another little love for Dolly Parton. Did you catch wind of that going on? I know you're closer to the area.
Yeah. We watched a little bit of it. There was a really good turnout of some high-profile Titans players that were there, like helping work the phones and helping pitch everything. And I'll just say that $1,000 a month for the first 6 months to the families who you know were affected by the fires. That's what Dolly had pledged personally to go ahead and do. So all of the money that was raised, and the $9 million number was right because there was you know people who had basically anonymous donors who said they would match whatever was donated by coming in, so that's why it jumped from like $3 to $4 million to almost $9 million is once that match money came through. And so all of that money is actually going to the foundation to help raise that number and to help raise the sort of work that they'll be able to do. You know, not just helping them get through the insurance process and you know build new homes, do all that sort of stuff, but you know supplementing lost income. Job training if people need it, you know, helping their kids out with, you know, time they've had to miss in school and all that sort of stuff. So it's a really, like, kind of holistic, all-encompassing plan that they've made out, and the kind that I think you don't see a lot of charity organizations to do. And once again, it just speaks to how Dolly Parton is absolutely a national treasure. And, I mean, for anybody who doesn't know her story, please, I urge you, go back and do some reading on it and everything. She is a whole lot more than just a great voice and a big set of boobs. A whole lot more.
We'll have to do a Dolly Parton podcast for you, August. That way you can get all that love and admiration out of your system. And it still wasn't very
Dude, I got a big soft spot, too. I got a big soft spot for it, too. I mean, I grew up around here. You know, I've known about Dolly Parton since I was a little kid. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard all the stories. Like I said, my wife and I, you know, quote Steel Magnolias on an almost weekly basis. I mean, she's hilarious. She's sweet. She's kind. She has gone through so much bull crap over the course of her life. And, you know, has always kept her chin up and done the better things. So, yes, all good for Dolly. But also just really glad to see, once again, you know, there's something special about this state. For anybody that's an out-of-market listener that, you know, has never lived here, never spent a lot of time, you know, you look what happened with the floods here in Nashville and the way that it wasn't, you know, a national audience or that sort of stuff that sort of rallied to help. It was Tennessee and Tennesseans and, you know, people from East Tennessee, West Tennessee, either side of the you know, all three of the grand divisions of Tennessee coming together to help take care of their own and to get people back on their feet. And, I mean, I knew people who lost their houses in those floods and ended up with better houses than they had before just because everybody cared so much about, you know, getting them back on their feet and helping them get over the trauma of what this happens. Mm-hmm. It's not just the money and the disruption in your life. It is a truly traumatic, life-changing event. So to see this happen, you know, in East Tennessee, which is one of the poorer, you know, parts of any state in the union, when you talk about Appalachia and you know, some of the lack of services that those folks get, to see the people of Tennessee and the people that care about Tennessee come together on their own, not take a government handout or anything, but do it in honest-to-goodness charity with no expectations of you know, expectation of reciprocation or reciprocity. It's just one of the reasons that I absolutely love this state, love the people. We, you know, me and 99% of Tennesseans disagree on all politics, but when it comes down to the bigger questions, you know, I think there's a lot of heart there.
Yeah, well said. And I wanted to just say rest in peace, and you'll be missed, to Craig Sager, a guy that I had been a fan of. I'm not a huge NBA fan, but he was he had such a wonderful outlook on life. Even all through his battle with cancer that he lost today, and he's got to be the best dressed sideline broadcaster. So rest in peace, Mr. Sager. You will be missed.
Did you see where Greg Popovich was moved to tears talking about Craig Sager? Greg freaking Popovich.
I'll have to.
You know,
coach
of the Spurs.
That'd be like Belichick.
It was absolutely amazing. Yeah, essentially. I mean, it's kind of on that level. And, I mean, I don't know. Once again, I remember watching a really great, 30-minute sort of the life of Craig Sager piece with him. I think the first time he got diagnosed with cancer, because he's beat it, three times. That dude is like the Forrest Gump of sports. I think most of it is on his Wikipedia page if you go read about it. But if you can find that profile online, he was the radio broadcaster for the Braves when Hank Aaron broke the home run record, and he was at home plate standing there with the mic when Hank Aaron rounded the bases after breaking that record. He also, on one of his earliest sporting things was covering, I can't remember if it was the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness, but he was a young, broke reporter, didn't have anywhere to stay. He broke into the stable and slept in one of the horses' stalls, and that horse, I swear to God, was Secretariat.
No, I hadn't heard. I got to find this that you watched. I just remember watching the NBA games on TNT. He was always there. And anytime I've heard an interview with him, or especially a basketball player, he always took interest in these guys. Like, he was one of those guys that had friends that were actual players, much younger than him. You know, guys like Shaquille O'Neal and stuff, who Sager was already an established reporter / broadcaster.
Oh, yeah. But
and even from their rookie years, you know, he was taking care of them and making sure he had, you know, whatever he was needing and stuff. And I just really respected somebody who made so many connections with people and had such a positive outlook on life, even when he... You know, like you said, you brought up some things that were so amazing in his life and really serendipitous, and then the offset, the bad karma to the good,
is dealing with cancer and him keeping a positive outlook throughout it. So I just wanted to take a couple minutes. So, August, that's it for me, brother, unless you got anything.
Well, I got to say two more quick things about Craig Sager. Number one, I'd encourage anyone to go listen to he got like a Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that at the ESPYs last year. His speech was right up there with the Jim Valvano, you know, never give up.
Oh yeah,
sort of speech. If you go listen to, you know, I mean, look, it's a guy who's had so many amazing things happen. He also had beaten cancer like three times before. He broadcast playoff games last year in between chemotherapy appointments, and was it ESPN actually set their contract stuff aside and let him broadcast from the sidelines of the finals last year, even though he's a TNT dude. I mean, that's how beloved he was. And 2016 cannot end soon enough. Also, RIP Alan Thicke.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, fans, thanks for listening. Thanks for the interaction on social media. You know where to find us. And let's get us a win. Let's get into the playoffs. Let's bring a playoff game to Nashville for the fans. We've hung in there. We've deserved it. And a nice Cinderella story would be fantastic. And why not us? So, August, let's go win some stuff.
Let's go win some stuff. And seriously, whoever called in Bomani Jones, tweet at me. August_MCM. I want to give you some props. Hashtag business.
Business.